Welcome to Real Herbalism Radio, show 219, recorded at Big Dog Studio. Today's show is brought to you in part by the Herbal Nerd Society.
The Herbal Nerd Society is a set of awesome people. Honestly, I love them. You can learn more about the Herbal Nerd Society by going to thepracticalherbalist.com and clicking on either the Join button or the Herbal Nerd Society tab.
All right. Now it's time for the show. Now here are your hosts.
I'm Candace Hunter.
I'm Patrick Hunter.
And welcome to Real Herbalism Radio.
Hi, Candace.
Hey, Patrick. That is the weirdest, least smooth intro we've done yet.
Well, I had my headphones on in an awkward way, and
it was really distracting.
A loop, and you didn't know what to do with it.
So you looked like you had a huge kink in your neck.
It did, but I was trying to keep the sound from the headphones getting through to my microphone. Yeah, because we're professionals up in here.
We're really professional. All right. So with all of that craziness under our belts, how did you like talking with Maya?
I liked it a lot. I was really interested in her idea of the three kingdoms of medicine. I didn't understand that until I listened to her again even.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
I am the very model of a modern major general. I've got information animal, vegetable, and mineral. I know the kings. Oh, actually, I don't know the kings of England. So that's as far in the song as I can go.
So it's mineral, animal.
Animal, mineral, or animal, vegetable, and mineral.
Okay. So that's the order. But yes. Yeah. So she has three books, right?
Yes.
Bestiary.
The Illustrated Herbiary, Illustrated Bestiary, Illustrated Crystallary.
Right. And the Crystallary is coming out.
It's coming out, I think it was in June. I did my pre-order already. I believe it ships at the beginning of June.
Okay.
So it's coming up soon.
Well, that's what I kind of like, that the three and the way those books look and are written. They're just a feast for the eyes. The artwork is intense and the descriptions are really good. They're just fun books to look at. And they're not 400 page tomes. They're 150 pages of really good, concise information decorated around this idea of bestiary or herbiary. And every time I say those words, I bring back to my D&D days of the Advanced Dungeons and Dragons Monster Manual or the bestiary or whatever it was. And,
inner gaming geek comes out.
Right, and all I can remember is paging through pages and pages and pages of those
memorizing
monsters.
All the monsters and their stats. Right.
So it's kind of like that, where you can memorize all of the monsters and their stats, or the beasts and their stats, or the plants and their stats, in this case, the crystals and their stats.
Yeah. And actually, I hate to admit, because it's kind of, I don't know, first world problem, but I've thought, well, do I combine the three decks or do I keep them separate? Do I combine, right now, I did guiltily, I combined the animal and the vegetable one because I thought, I like what she was talking about. Sometimes you need action, but other times it's emotional. And then sometimes there's times where you're just sitting there frustrated with a situation, whatever that might be. Maybe it's a chronic issue you've been having or whatever. It could be physical. It could be a frustration with something in life, whatever it is. And you've tried everything you can think of to try, and you've talked to your friends and tried everything they can think of, and you've talked to your various practitioners, and you've tried all of that, and yet still you've got this confusing, frustrating problem. So that's, a time when I'll go and draw a card and say, okay, maybe this will help me. And when I combined the two decks, what it ended up doing for me was started helping me recognize when is the core of the problem really more emotional in nature, in which case I've got to do some work there. And when was the core of the problem really more, I need to take some action. And that, so an animal will show up, as the card that I draw when there's really an action that's needed. Mm. And a plant shows up when it's more of an emotional conundrum that I really need to unravel. And sometimes I'm surprised by it. There are times where I wasn't expecting it to be an animal because I really thought it was an emotional problem. But then by taking the advice of the animal, acting, finding a way to move that kind of action into my life, make a nest or bury a bone or whatever, whatever it is that the animal card shows up as, then I find that starts to move the emotion. So sometimes we end up fixing an emotional problem by coming at it sort of sideways, or fixing an action or physical problem, an issue, by coming at it sort of sideways.
Yeah, sometimes head-on doesn't always work. So you're using, and was that the intended idea behind the cards, was to use them as like more of a divination tool, because it sounds like?
I don't know. I don't know what Maya's intention was, but for me, I find that that's really a helpful, it can be a very helpful tool.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes I'll draw a card and just look at it and go, oh, I don't even know what this means. This didn't help me at all. And I'll walk away. And usually 2 weeks later, I'll come back for whatever reason. I'm now going to draw a different card. And that card that I drew last time is still up. And I'll look at it and suddenly it'll click. And I'll say, oh, well, I drew the Magnolia card because I really did need to actually hold my ground and be patient with the fact that there was chaos going on around me, and it was okay that there was chaos going around me because that chaos wasn't my problem, but I just needed to be, you know, have my dignity through it all. But when I was in the middle of it, I couldn't see that. So right. A lot of times I'll find that whatever it was that didn't make sense, then later on it makes sense.
Okay, well, that's an interesting thought. Like you said, I wonder if she thought of that either. I know that there was a debate between her and her publisher at the time whether or not she should even include the cards.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and she didn't want to do the cards. I'm actually glad. Personally, I'm glad she did. I would have used the books, you know, kind of like that, the bibliomancy style, which I've done with some of the other books that I have.
What's bibliomancy?
It's where it's an old practice of divination where you get your family Bible out, you ask the question, or whatever it is that you're trying to think about, the problem you're trying to solve or the question you need some guidance on. Close your eyes, you open it to a page, and you put your finger down on the page, and whatever your finger landed on, that proverb or saying or whatever, is the answer.
Okay.
Or will help you, guide you in the direction you need to look to see the answer.
I thought you were going to say, what you do is you take your 2 10-sided dice or 3 10-sided dice, and you roll your dice between 1 and 1,000 pages. Then once you have that, then you roll to find out what chapter and what thing. Because it's all about the die roll.
It's all right? About the dice.
Yeah. So that's where I thought you were going to go. But yeah, I guess I have heard of that method of finding the answer that you seek by putting it into the fates, if you will, by opening up a book and dropping your finger at a spot and then read what's under it.
Yeah, you know, I used to think how when I first started learning, working with tarot and some of the other divination tools, I found they were useful and they were working, but I kept looking at it going, why? This doesn't make any sense why this should work. You know, why would this card psychically come up that's the right card? And then someone whom I love and care for, not you, honey, looked at me and said, well, you know, they just write all of those different answers on there so vaguely that it makes it so that anything you do, it'll apply to it. And I thought about that for a while, but it's not really very, it doesn't really work. Mm-hmm. So, and I started thinking more. Someone pointed out to me that at least with pendulum, when you're using a pendulum to, you know, ask questions and get answers, you can think about it being some kind of spirit or Godhead or someone, you know, moving your hand or moving the pendulum. But the reality is you've got microfine muscle control, and that muscle control is at a very unconscious level. So it's hard to control it if you just close your eyes and let it go and trust that your muscles will show you. Your body's giving you the answer right there, because your body will move in conjunction with the deeper part of your brain that's trying to give the answer to you anyway.
Yeah, there's another method of that too, where you're swaying. If you sway towards something, it's a yes. If you sway away, it's no.
Yeah,
not that you're doing it consciously, but it's a way to learn that that you're going into or moving away, and it's very subtle, but you can start to see those things and use that gut instinct or that feeling. So it's interesting.
So so I started thinking about that, and I was like, oh, you know what? That's probably kind of what happens with the cards too, because on some subtle level, my body and my mind already know which card I really need to draw. They're just going to, you know, it's not as random as you think, you know.
Right.
So, or, you know, maybe there's some divine spirit that's, you know, specifically talking through the cards. I also have the whole quantum theory until you turn the card over, it's blank. When you turn it over, it becomes the card it needs to be. So you can pick any card you want, and it's always going to be the right card.
Does the tree make sound? No one's there, right? Does it still make sound?
But when you start looking at those like really advanced sciences, you're like, oh, yeah, I guess that does sort of explain the magic.
Right, right. You know, the funny thing is we were talking with her too. She was, there was a line where she was, And I had to stop and listen again. I said, did she just say eat rocks?
Yep.
And then I asked, she said, well, she's not talking about eating, actually like sticking a
chewing up
shard of quartz in your mouth and sucking on it, is she?
I mean, yeah.
You know, but I don't think so. But then you said, well, you know, calcium carbonate rock.
Like, yeah, there are a lot of the minerals that we take through supplements are rocks. So we do ingest rocks as rocks. I mean, they're powdered, but they're rocks. And then the other thing is that a lot of people, or not a lot of people, maybe a lot of people, I don't know how many people, make what's called rock water. And it's rock water is one of the, I believe it's one of the flower essences in the Bach flower system. Mm-hmm. But you can do it with not any rock because you need to do it with rocks that are non-toxic for human consumption. But you take the rock, like the crystal, you know, maybe you need to work on some digestive issues, and so the recommendation was a citrine crystal. So you put that into your thermos and you fill it with filtered water, and then you drink that water, and that's rock water. In this case, charged with citrine's energy. So there's a lot of rocks that you ingest that way by ingesting their energy.
Okay.
There is actually scientific data showing that the molecular or the structure of water changes based on what it comes in contact with. And I cannot quote to you what the studies are. I just know that I know they've been done. I watched a documentary on this 4 or 5 years ago.
I understand what you're saying. Water is highly
malleable.
Yes, it is. I was reading something about heavy water and what that actually is. And you know, because everyone hears heavy water and they think, you know, nuclear power, and then they think waste, and then, you know, the fact of the matter is you can actually drink heavy water.
Yeah.
It's just water with a third hydrogen atom on it.
Right.
And it actually occurs naturally, not like prolifically, but it does. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, I just, you know, when you said that, I was like, yeah, I suppose you're right, but I just have this vision of, you know, being on a riverbed.
So they're trying to chew on a river rock?
I think I'm going to chew on some rock here.
That's probably not a good idea.
Right.
Yeah. Not for most of us anyway.
So in her book, does she go over, you know, a lot of the, because I don't think I've looked at Christopher myself yet. I just did the interview. You know, does she really break down the different properties of them?
I would assume that she,
I thought we had a copy.
We don't have a copy of the crystallary. Oh,
okay. So in bestiary and,
In herbiary, she doesn't like break down the properties in a, you know, medicinal way. Like she doesn't talk about what the primary constituent of beaver is,
right?
You know, I mean, but she does talk about the actions, you know, the nature of beaver, essentially.
Sure.
And so when you choose like beaver card, the nature of beaver is what you're really working with, or you know, the otter.
It's energy.
Yeah.
Same thing with the plants then. Energy that would be.
Yeah. Yes, and I'm assuming that it'll be that way with Crystallary. I'm really excited to see that book and get a chance to look at it. But Patrick's still having a little bit of a challenge here with the whole. It's a little woo-woo for him.
Well, I mean, it's outside of my normal way of thinking, but you know, sometimes you have to change your way of thinking.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to seeing her book come out. It'll be out, I believe, in June, and it'll be out at all the major locations. I'm sure Amazon. I think I saw a pre-order on Amazon, and you could get all three books at once.
Yes. Yeah, you can. In fact, if you do pre-order, it's really helpful to the author with any book. I mean, it's not just helpful to Maya, but in this case, I'd love to see y'all help Maya out by doing the pre-order. The way the whole publishing system works now is that the more pre-orders that they get, the more likely it is that the book will make it to the bookshelves in physical bookstores like at Barnes & Noble or any of the other large ones. it also causes the buyers for publishing fairs and that sort of thing to stock up more. So it helps with overall sales.
Create the demand now before it comes out, so that they can kind of make it available more so than more of the after fact. Yeah. So look for her stuff there. They're probably at the publisher's website. She probably is going to have it at her website as well. And I think we'll have that on the show notes.
We have the links in the show notes.
But, you know, something that I was thinking about, you had mentioned the other night, Candace, was not necessarily a news story, but something that caught your eye in Facebook, of all places.
Right.
And that was, well, you say, what was it about?
It was a couple of different, I noticed it with one specific herbalist was talking about how other herbalists are starting to try to make money off of coronavirus by selling webinars and similar things specific to how to treat coronavirus with plants. And the part of the criticism with it was, this is a potential epidemic. We should be giving the information away because we want people to be healthy, you know, very altruistic sort of approach. And part of it was, we don't have enough science and information to back whether or not any specific plant remedies will or won't work. And they're both valid points. But one of the things that I found personally challenging about it is that in the field of herbalism, we are very quick to shame others, shame each other, shame ourselves over asking for money. And I find that very frustrating. I mean, if you ask a doctor about what would be good to protect against coronavirus, he or she is going to have no problem charging you for the visit.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
If you go to a seminar for, you know, talk about with nurses and doctors and medical professionals about how to prevent coronavirus, the seminar is going to charge you for the money for that. It's probably not going to be cheap. It's going to be really expensive.
Yeah, it might. I mean, but, you know, there's going to be money that's going to exchange for the knowledge. And that's the thing is that I don't – now, if it's someone coming up with some, you know, made-up tincture that they say it's good against corona, that's one thing. If it's somebody that's coming up and saying, here, I have all this knowledge on how to deal with viruses in general. These have been tried and true practices. And these are things that you should learn how to do, and whether or not it's the coronavirus or something else. But using the coronavirus is to get attention, I'm less apt to be annoyed by that or upset by that, because at the end of that, the person is saying, I have this knowledge. I've gone to school. I've read books. I've experimented. I've done all of this stuff. And the way that I am able to make money is by doing this. And this is what I do. And it's no different than the doctor did it as well. So that's why I'm not really against it, as long as it's, you know, for information and such.
I don't know that I feel really like I can weigh in for sure on whether I think it's good or bad to be charging for seminars or information on coronavirus. I do think that it's something we all need to sit with. And I think that we, as herbalists especially, need to really take a good look at why we're feeling or reacting strongly to the question one way or the other. Because I think that there's a problem within our whole field that many of us struggle with the idea that we shouldn't be charging money for this knowledge. But the reality is, we've worked hard to gain the knowledge. We've spent hours studying, practicing, experimenting, just like doctors and nurses and dentists and physical therapists and many, many other, you know, professional healers. We've done that too, and I think it's really important that we respect ourselves enough to say, hey, we deserve to be paid. We deserve to be able to make a living doing this, which makes us joyful and gives us great, we're passionate about, and that we've given so much of our time, our energy, and our lives to. We should be allowed to make a living doing that. And the people that come to us, they haven't spent that time learning that. That's why they're coming to us. So if you're going to an expert in any field, I would expect to pay them somehow. Money is the form of exchange in our current society.
Right.
You know, if you went back 200 years, I might be paying with eggs or something else, or a tapestry that I've made. But today, money is the universal energy exchange. I should receive energy for the energy I give.
I think maybe, too, this person was trying to really say, you know, don't be a charlatan. Don't be.
That is important. Yeah.
Don't specifically make money on this idea of, you know, clickbait with the coronavirus thing.
Yeah. And we have a lot of people out there who really aren't herbalists, but who do make a lot of money selling products that look like herbs and sometimes are and sometimes aren't what regular herbalists or trained herbalists would consider to be herbals. But, you know, we've got a lot of, there's a lot of, you know, I don't want to like point the finger at MLMs or multi-level marketing systems, but they're one of many types of companies that sometimes sell things that are herbs or herbal products, but the people selling them really have no training, no expertise, and no true understanding of what they're working with. So it's an awful lot of trust that those products really are the right ones for the people that are buying them. Whereas an actual herbalist knows that the plants that they're suggesting to this person or to a client are highly likely to be beneficial and highly unlikely to do harm.
Right. So with all that being said, I think, you know, like always, common sense. If it's a reputable source, look into it. If they're using coronavirus in the headline tags, coronavirus, and they're trying to get you to buy some product or thing because it'll cure it, it's probably not going to be the case. Just use your common sense and just keep going. But again, if someone's got the knowledge and they know what they're talking about, the coronavirus isn't new. It's just this strain is new.
Yeah.
Coronavirus has been around for a while. We dealt with it before.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But with that being said, I guess it's time to end the podcast. So if you're out there and about, remember to review us on Apple iTunes if you can. We're on Pinterest. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. By all means, if you have a question for us and you would like Candace to answer it, the Real Herbalism Radio, the Herbal 101 questions, there's a form on every one of the podcasts that you can fill out. It's on the right-hand side. So know, like, and trust us. And with that.
And if you really, the other thing I was going to say is remind people, if you want to find Sue, go look at theintegratedherbalist.com or find her at Occupy Medical.
Yes, exactly. All right.
Put an herb on it.
The statements made about herbs and products on this podcast have not been evaluated by the United States Food and Drug Administration, FDA, and are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent disease. All information provided on this podcast or any affiliated websites is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional. You should not use the information on this podcast and its affiliated websites for a diagnosis or treatment of any health problem. Always consult with a healthcare professional before starting any new vitamins, supplements, diet, or exercise program before taking any medication, or if you have or suspect you might have a health problem. Any testimonials, questions, or case studies are based on individual results and do not constitute a guarantee that you will achieve the same results.